do a little word association this afternoon. What comes to mind when I say philosophy and logic? Is it a picture of someone who is able to take complicated concepts and twist them in such a way that you are convinced of something that you don't really believe and didn't want to believe, but somehow they've tricked you into believing it? Is that your concept of philosophy? For some it is. For some, those who think of philosophy think of those who are trying to trick them, essentially. The problem is that this isn't the root of philosophy. The root of philosophy truly is the search for the truth, no matter what the truth is. There's no trying to get to this conclusion. There's the desire to find the conclusion. It's interesting, though, that the very roots of philosophy and the very roots of that kind of logistical trickery have the same beginnings. Plato, in the very beginnings of philosophy, was arguing with this group called sophists. Everybody say that with me. Sophists. You don't want to be a sophist. Sophists aren't trustworthy people. Think of the qualities of a politician or a lawyer that we make jokes about. Not the good qualities that we need in our society. We need good politicians, we need good lawyers, but the qualities that make us not like politicians and lawyers. That's what a sophist is. A sophist takes logic and twists it, trying to make you believe or think something that isn't necessarily true. It's for their own benefit. Or whoever pays them to do their twisting. Sophistry. That's what a sophist is. To give you an example of modern-day sophistry, there are what we call moral questions. And these have quite a history in our academia. But they're not really promoting truth as much as they're promoting, well, who would you rather not see live, really, is what it comes out to be. I'll show you what I mean. They often involve trains, which is odd, but they do. A train is going down a track, barreling down a track, and you were at the lever that decides which direction this train is going to go. Either these moral questions work, the train will hit a group of 10 elderly, or will hit a toddler. Which way do you pull the lever? That's sophistry. Because it's making you make a decision that you don't want to make. God doesn't want you to desire to send the train one way or the other way. God doesn't desire for you to do that at all. And the point I like to make is that you're not the one who set this situation up. Who put you there? Who tied them up? Who directed the train in this way? Who is making you stand there? All of those kind of things, they muddy the water. In these moral questions, they want you to simply make a calculation. These people are worth more than these people. And, well, I think we can see in our modern society where that can get us. The reason I tell you all of this is because our first reading and our gospel involve sophistry, one way or another. In our first reading, we have sophists who are saying, it doesn't matter. Eat the pork. Just eat the pork. Eating the pork is worth less than, is better than the pain we're going to inflict upon you. So just eat the pork. Do what we tell you to do. Abandon your ways. The sophistry in the gospel is this woman dies. No, the man dies and the woman is childless. So her husband dies 7 more times because of the 7 brothers. Whose wife is she? It's not a real circumstance. It's not a real reality. Both of these take the human person and make them more like an equation, more like a mathematical problem. But people are much more than a mathematical problem. To go back to that train scenario, if a train's barreling down the track and you're told you have to make a decision as to pull a lever one way or another and a certain group of people will die, my answer isn't pull the lever. Sisters and brothers, my answer is run. Run as fast as you can, as fast, as strong as you can, and save whoever you can. Sophists will try to make you believe that you have to compromise your values in this world, one way or another. That's the only way to get things done, a sophist will tell you, is to compromise your values. But there's always another option. It's not always an easy option. It's not always an option that's comfortable. But it's an option that involves doing the best we can with what we have, with what we're able to do. That's what these parents will teach their children. Often it comes down to do the best you can with what you have. Not some magic answer that will somehow make everything okay, to reason our way through it, but rather to build upon that desire for hope. Paul, in the second reading, he tells us to exert ourselves, to do just that, to run as best we can, to do the best we can. The ending of both our first reading and our gospel have to do with the resurrection. There is hope outside of this life. There is hope beyond these impossible questions, these endless cycle of choices that we make on a daily basis that cause us to even doubt if there is a point. There is the resurrection of the body. There is something to which we are looking forward to. Don't let these moral questions, these moral delusions, really, afflict us in such a way that diminish what we are aiming for. Ultimately, to live with one another in a place where we don't have to make such choices, where we'll all live together as the body of Christ.